Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. This rip is brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key. Your mobile phone app has a key. And Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. bitkey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
What's up, freaks? This rip was brought to you by our good friends at Obscura. Obscura is the first VPN that can't log your activity by design. Instead of empty promises, Obscura fully embraces the Bitcoin or don't trust verify mantra. They can't log your traffic, even if they tried. Obscura believes that user data is toxic waste. In addition to private payments via Lightning, you can sign up with an account without having to give any personal identifying information. It's a beautiful thing. It's the VPN I use every day. It's incredibly fast. You can go on streaming sites with it. They don't say, hey, you've got a VPN. It just works. Go to obscura.net. Use the code RHR25 for 25% off an annual subscription. This is an incredible deal. Obscura.net, RHR25 for 25% off an annual subscription.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Big Friday. Big Friday. It's rabbit hole recap time. We've got a long-time guest. Long-time friend, long-time guest, but it's been a long time since you've been on, Alex. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You guys want to tell us about that background, where you are?
You want to lead us
Yeah, off? Sure. I took that photo about 5 minutes ago. Matt and I tried to set up in the wilderness, and we were very close to having a very epic live view. But the Starlink just couldn't quite hack it. We were close.
My backpack fell like 40 feet down the hill, 50 feet down the hill.
Set the backpack up. It starts rolling down the hill. It was fun. We are here because the Human Rights Foundation brought together some Bitcoiners for a few days of discussions and collaborations on the periphery of Anthony Scaramucci's digital assets conference, the SALT, which takes place in Jackson Hole a couple of days before the Fed meeting. So we had a bunch of good Bitcoiners here. We had Jack Mahlers, Paul Itoy, Eric Herzman. We also had Jeff Booth and a few friends of ours from the activism side of Bitcoin. And we just spent a couple of days conspiring, and we did some speeches at the SALT thing. And afterwards, a friend of ours who lives nearby decided to take us hiking and fly fishing. And we're up at this hotel kind of in the middle of nowhere that's not in Jackson Hole. And we didn't realize that it's the hotel where the Fed meeting actually happens. So Matt's driving in yesterday and they stop him and they're like, are you part of the security protocol?
Yeah, they thought we were here. That's how we found out.
So we were actually at
the Fed meeting.
You say I am. I'm here to secure money, though. I'm here to secure the money the right way. Okay.
We're here to put you out of business. I in the coffee line this morning next to me was Neil Kashkari. As I was walking outside a couple minutes later, Andrew Bailey, the other Andrew Bailey, not our Bitcoiner Andrew Bailey, but the other one, the head of the Bank of England was walking in. So look, man, it's a central banker fest, and hopefully some of the last years of this antiquated technology we have where people kind of sit in a closed room and decide the cost of capital for all of humanity, which is completely ridiculous, but that's where we are.
Yeah. Did you guys pick up any new Fed speak this week? I don't know if you caught his speech at all, but it was very Fed speaky today.
You should do your interpretation of what you thought was going to happen.
We were on, so first off, on the SALT event, it's historically like a crypto suit event, right? And so this year, Alex won last year, and this year they said that we could have like a Bitcoin HRF section for it. And I would just say that, the Martyism that like shitcoins are dead and like we passed the chasm and everyone's a Bitcoin maximalist now is so far from reality. Like it was just a whole different world there. It was pretty fucking eye-opening in that regard. Like they're, linking things with Chainlink and putting real world assets on blockchains and stuff. And Eric Trump was there. It was like kind of its own circus in itself. On the Fed side, like what I was saying we were talking about Powell, first of all, like it's absolutely ridiculous, like how much influence like these people have on, but I think like from the bare minimum of what I saw was kind of like what people expected, which is like, we're going to stay the course a little bit, but we're open to cutting rates, but we're not going to like specifically announce that we're going to cut rates right now. And we were actually on a hike. We were on like a hike like 20 minutes away while that was going on. And you didn't actually have to look at any of the headlines. Like all you had to do was just like check the Bitcoin price. And like we woke up at 112 and it was at like 117. So it was like, okay, well, like if we were over 120, like then we probably announced that we're definitely cutting rates. But like at that price range, it's like, okay, they just insinuated that that's probably the direction we're going to go in. But my point is you probably know better than us because we've had internet troubles over here.
No, I was trolling a little because I haven't watched it yet. I've just read the after effects. So it's funnily enough, 20 minutes before we went live, Logan and I started recording an episode of TFTC with Michael Howell from Cross Border Capital talking about what Powell might say, but had the same experience. We finished that interview and I was very locked to the camera, being an attentive host, didn't look at Twitter or anything, and saw my block clock when we stopped and we were at like 116.9. I was like, ah, there were some dovish comments in Jackson Hole. And so for those, I'm sure many of you know, but I think it was UBS or Barclays had a good sort of synopsis of what it was. It was like basically Powell came in, he basically pushed back against Trump a little bit, saying, hey, tariffs are inflationary, at least temporarily. Like we're doing the best we can with the data that we have. And he said, considering the data we have, there was jobs revisions last month that are making us sort of change our view. And then he said, we're not going to target a 2% average inflation rate anymore. We're going to try and go back to the historical target. But more importantly, he said, we're focused on the jobs market because it looks like it's weakening. And so with that in mind, our policy may shift, and the markets took that as rates are getting cut next month. So that was the extent of what he said, I believe. But
yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing that we still live in this world where it's kind of like when you're waiting for the Pope to be named, and we're all watching is the smoke going to be, you know, is it going to be white or not? It's amazing that we have this centralization and this politicization of base money for the world, and literally people sitting a few hundred yards that way in a private room that's completely opaque, you know, it's a private event, you know, get to decide.
Yeah, the big really security wild. Guards outside the doors.
Beefy. You weren't sneaking in. There's no way.
You don't think I could take them?
No.
Yeah. No, it's hilarious. I want to give Trevor, who's running the social account, he sent out a tweet that was very accurate. It said the Fed is abandoning their 2% average inflation target, which is what they're doing. And everybody was giving them shit because they're like, oh, they're not abandoning an inflation target. They're going back to 2%. To be more specific, they want it lower. And it's like, people, you're squabbling over fine details that don't even matter. You can have a 2% inflation rate, but they're about to lower rates. Inflation's already high. You have stock markets at all-time highs, leverage at all-time highs. Wild. They're about to turn it on turbo.
But they specifically said that they're leaving the 2% target.
Post 2020, when they were thinking about moving it to 3%, and then people pushed back, they said, "All right, we're gonna try and fight back towards an average, a rolling average of 2% over I don't know the time scale." And then they said, "We're gonna go back to our previous target from before we made that policy decision." But to your point, it's insane that I don't think the three of us are, but the world is lingering on the words of this man and the few people around him. Donald Trump's probably happy today, though.
Of course. I mean, he's been trying to push for this, right?
Yeah.
I just think it's great that finally we have a Bitcoin-focused view from the property. You have every single mainstream media outlet over, like, just a two-minute walk from where we're sitting. And, you know, they're all breathlessly awaiting what's going on. And, you know, we just have a different view on the matter. So it's nice to have some local representation.
Where we were almost falling down the hill trying to, like, get set up for a rabbit hole recap. Gladstein had an interesting idea for you to set up a TFTC tent here next year.
I think you should do it, Marty.
So we don't have to, like, prop ourselves up on the hill.
I'll do that. I'm in. I'll come to Jackson Hole.
You just go and you sit outside and you have the background that you're looking at.
You need to bring a tent.
Yeah, but you need a tent and you got a shield from sun. It's super hot here.
Yeah. I'll set up right next to Andrew Ross Sorkin, and we'll do Jamie Dimon to come up, talk about Bitcoin. It'll be good. At that point, we'll have one. They'll be bending the knee to us, and it'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see what happens a year from
by
now.
By next year?
Yeah.
Feeling bullish?
Yeah. Well, real world assets and Ethereum treasury companies are going to take over the world. Tom Lee is saying there's going to be a flipping of Bitcoin, and that meme's back.
But the SALT event was, it's really jarring because I don't know about you, but you know, I spend most of my time at Bitcoin events, and this is my first time back at a digital assets event in a long time. And it's pretty shocking. I mean, it really reminds you of how early you are when someone like Jack Mahlers, who usually can fill a 10,000 person room at the Bitcoin conference. I mean, these crypto people and these TradFi people are just, I mean, he's talking about on stage how they have 43,000 Bitcoin and they're doing all this amazing stuff, and people could just care less. And
there was 30 people in the room, you know, maybe 50 max. And then there was like quadruple that eating lunch outside the doors.
And it's probably Jack's only, you know, live fireside appearance in a 6-month window. Yeah, I just thought it was amazing.
It was pretty hilarious.
That's funny. I ran into, I mean, I didn't talk to him. I talked to him briefly, but when I was in Abu Dhabi in December last year, it was a very similar event that Scaramucci was spearheading. Is he still shilling? Right. There's Xfinity, Aave. He was big on real world assets, and he was shilling some shitcoin that Galaxy's aped into.
They're shilling everything you can imagine. I mean, I walked into the room for a second. I didn't listen much, but the CEO of Kraken was talking about how, well, you know, Bitcoin's fine, but we really need that programmability. Like, they're still stuck on this, like, Turing complete blockchain stuff. It's amazing. It's kind of like the class of 2017. You had Charles Hodgkinson.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, he was there. You had Brad Garlinghouse was sitting next to me at the breakfast one day. I'm just like, what is going on here?
So that's Cardano.
That's the Ripple guy.
Yeah.
So you have all these coins that, you know, were created years and years ago exclusively as schemes to prey on the public, basically. You know, it's kind of sad. These people never got in trouble. They'll probably never get in trouble. You know, and instead we have the privacy devs being attacked. It may be pretty frustrated.
It is. It's frustrating, but it also means we have time to continue to stay humble and stack sats because people are going to get so bamboozled this cycle. Tom Lee's out there, really.
He was there. People are literally sitting next to, standing at the dinner the other night. So they brought in every single cartoon character. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, I was wrong, Matt. Hand up. Hand up.
Yeah, no. By the way, like, say what we want about Scaramucci, but I do respect the fact that he wanted us to come. He wanted a half day Bitcoin focused, Bitcoin only section. I thought that was really cool. So I'm grateful to him for putting that together. Because at least you get some of it. I mean, otherwise it's just coin after coin after coin after coin. So I thought that was a positive step. And it was actually quite useful, I think, for a lot of us. Because there's a lot of people in the audience who aren't token scammers. They're like, I don't know, I own 5% of the land in Wyoming, or some pension manager, or the governor of Wyoming was here, Fed board governors were here, senators, congressmen. So, you know, it's still a really useful event. And I'm glad that there was a big chunk of Bitcoin only focus on it.
Yeah.
I did think it was funny that thanking me for coming. And then, like, his only question he had for me was, what was the price of Bitcoin going to be by the end of the year?
Scaramucci asked you this?
Yeah. And he's like, oh, we have the Bitcoin experts here. Like, what's the price of Bitcoin by the end of the year? And I deflected it. And I don't think he just wanted like a straight answer. And I'm not making predictions anymore. But then I think like yesterday or 2 days ago, he made a public Bitcoin price prediction, like for end of the year. I forget. I think he's 180K by end of the year.
180, yeah.
So I wonder who told him 180. Like, I didn't answer, but if I had said like 250, maybe his price prediction would have been 250. I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, you should have anchored. Like, I'm going with Josh Mandel's 444,000 by November. It's gonna happen.
Alliterations.
It's also tiresome, but like I said, gives us time to build, stack more sats, and I think. I'd like to get your perspective on this, considering all the work, the bounties, the grants that you guys are doing at HRF, particularly around privacy-focused technologies. We've seen the proliferation of Cashew, particularly. I think most recently with the implementation in BitChat. And I saw that Jack and Callie were pushing some updates to BitChat in both Android and iOS this week. And so, since you mentioned it earlier about the attack on privacy devs, what do you think the status is right now, Alex?
Yeah, obviously it's paramount importance. I'm of two minds. I'm obviously really upset about the selective targeting of the developers who are building open source software. And it makes me sad that the American government is going after the blacksmith when someone stabbed someone else with a knife. Got to go after the criminals, not the actual people making the tools. It's a sad state of affairs. I did see a DOJ update, I guess, yesterday that maybe signaled that maybe we'll go in a different direction in the future. But, you know, for now, it's not a good look on that front. On the other hand, though, the actual tools are really exciting and just so much easier to use. And there's so many more options than there were 5 years ago, on almost every level in terms of end user privacy options for Bitcoin. Stuff is just getting better and better. Lightning is getting easier to use. Matt and I were talking yesterday about the Spark stuff, and I mean the wallet of Satoshi beta. I mean, I know we're not talking about a replacement for if you need to coin join 100 UTXOs or something. But for like retail spending and fighting surveillance capitalism, it's we're getting there. Like we're just by the, you know, 12 months from now, we're going to have three or four different ways to achieve very good privacy and pay merchants who speak Lightning. And we just, that's light years beyond where we were 5 years ago.
Yeah. No, I was in Georgia last week for the proto launch, and Spark was a big topic of discussion behind the scenes with the sort of technically oriented people that were at the event. A lot of people really excited about Spark and how it's being implemented. And I know we were a bit skeptical of them in the beginning, but it seems like Late Spark has found something here with Spark. And I think this happened since last week, but it seems like the Rumble wallet will be implementing Spark as well.
Yeah, I saw, well, the Spark Twitter account said that. It wasn't like a press release or anything, but it did seem like they're implementing what like Tether has, wallet development kit. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Rumble has a lot of users. They have hundreds of millions of users. So if they add a Bitcoin Tether wallet to Rumble, that is, you know, no KYC, pretty easy to use, decent trust model in terms of rug risk. The Spark guys recently added the ability to leave on chain, settle on chain without asking permission to do so.
Yeah,
which is key. You have like a pretty decent trade-off balance there. And I think the important thing is it needs to be really easy to use and it needs to be cheaper than the alternatives. So when you have that combination, then all of a sudden you start to see real scale. And I mean, to Alex's point, I mean, I wouldn't specifically call Spark a privacy tool, right? But when you use on-chain Bitcoin, you're leaking a lot of privacy. And then when you use a KYC wallet, you're obviously, your identity is tied to you. So we have like easy to use Lightning enabled Spark and Arc wallets and stuff like that.
Right.
At least for definitely for like small amounts, everyday purchases and stuff, you get like pretty decent gains there. And then you have to also think like, what is the status quo? Like the status quo is like people walking around and using like Apple Pay, Google Pay, credit cards.
We were trying to tip the fly fishing guy, Bitcoin, right? And you were saying it was a little, there's still bugs with something like a Phoenix, right? Where,
yeah, I didn't catch many fish, but me and Eric were the only ones who orange pilled our god. So, but we onboarded him to Phoenix. And by the end of the trip, I basically asked him, I was like, do you want your tip in dollars or Bitcoin? And he said, Bitcoin.
It's a huge boss.
That was just a big win.
But did he get it before Powell's comments today?
Yeah, he's up.
So he's up. So he's very happy.
Which is good because I did like cut some corners and I said, like, it's just, you just hold it and it goes up forever. it's better that we didn't dump.
But still there can be, it's a little tricky with the liquidity issues with even something like a Phoenix. So RIP Mutiny, but I think the idea they had there is amazing. It continues to be great of like, maybe you'll have Spark or Arc or something like that, which is for your first like $100 worth, it's just going to be there. And then once you have more than a certain amount, you know, you go into self-custodial Lightning.
No, I think actually what it is probably makes more sense, because that was the Mutiny idea, right, which has all these different UX hurdles. Like they could go in the Spark trade-off model, like you're probably fine with like $1,000 to $5,000 in that wallet. Mm-hmm. And then you settle on chain. Sure. And then because on-chain self-custody is super easy.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's no, like implementing that in the UX forward way would be actually relatively easy.
So if you imagine you have all these people who are getting bootstrapped in, whether through anything from just tips to gaming to remittances to who knows what, and they're all in different payment pools, whether it be Arc or Spark, et cetera. I mean, the beautiful thing is they can all speak to each other via Lightning. They can all buy stuff at hopefully the Square merchant terminal soon with, you know, they're speaking Spark or Arc or eCash, and yet they can pay a merchant and the merchant gets dollars. Or in Kenya, they get Tando, or in Costa Rica, they get, you know, Simpe credits. I think we're heading to a pretty exciting world from that perspective.
Yeah, when you compare it like, I think the broader crypto, like a lot of the crew that was outside of the Bitcoin focus crew in Jackson Hole this week, they probably see what's going on in L2s and Ethereum and Solana and all this bridging and stuff and these rollups and whatever it may be. And I haven't played around with it, but I've seen people playing around with it, and the UX around that is just completely abhorrent. And I don't think they're aware at all of the interoperable nature of all these different second layer solutions on Bitcoin because of the Lightning Network.
Yeah, that's the key, right? It's the glue.
Yeah. And just building on, I think we'll have a pretty heavily privacy focused episode here, considering the guests and just the headlines over the last week. We don't have a list, so I'm just going off the top of the head. But to your point earlier about on-chain transactions, I think the regulators and sort of banking cabal is aware of this. I'm sure you both saw the BIS come out with some idea to sort of track UTXOs and tag them with KYC information and essentially ask for people using wallets to self-report, and then they grade individual UTXOs and determine whether or not somebody should receive them or not. And I think these two froze. They've been having some technical difficulties, but I think the reason I bring this up is just to highlight the importance of building out these second layer solutions that are more privacy preserving than on-chain UTXOs, which are, as we all know, very hard to use in a private manner unless you know what you're doing. I think things like splicing in and out of the Lightning Network and doing channel management with that helps. PayJoin development kit, which HRF is contributing to, that would be massive if we could get exchanges to adopt PayJoin. We can increase on-chain privacy, but I don't think we should depend on that. I think it's become pretty clear that privacy via second layer solutions and a combination of second layer solutions is best in class right now for people trying to spend in a day-to-day way with Bitcoin. So I'm going to keep ad-libbing here. I'm just going to keep ad-libbing. Privacy, it's important. There you are.
The laptop was in the heat and overheated.
Are you on your phone now?
What? We're inside.
Now we moved inside.
Oh, nice. Let's talk about the BIS. Did you guys see that?
No. What happened?
They want to like bag and tag UTXOs and have like a grading system about
Oh, I see. With ordinals, right?
I think ordinals sort of prove that you can have ways to identify individual UTXOs. I think they're building on that concept to apply it to just broader UTXO usage.
Yeah, I mean, this is where the pay me in Bitcoin thing becomes really important. You know, I was looking at this scheme in Thailand. I'm about to go visit there. There's a lot of like, not necessarily Bitcoin, but a lot of like stablecoin crypto adoption happening at the government level there. And they have this thing where now tourists can show up in Thailand with Bitcoin or whatever other crypto. And you can just at the airport change it into cash quickly on your phone in an app that pays any Thai merchant, right? So they're trying to move in this direction where essentially they're going to harvest hard currency from tourists. And force you to use their shitcoin. So basically they'll harvest Bitcoin from tourists from America, Russia, wherever, who will then like, you know, go into their gated permissioned payment system. And I think the way to defeat that is pay me in Bitcoin, right? So if the educational people in Thailand are successful enough and they can get enough word out, and if people start to realize what's happening and the merchants just say, no, I don't want your shitcoin, I pay me in Bitcoin, then we can defeat this whole scheme, you know, which is ultimately the goal of BIS, right? Is to, you know, have KYC Bitcoin exchanged for some kind of credit, right? That would be accepted. But if the merchants accept Bitcoin, real Bitcoin is anybody's Bitcoin, then we win. So that's kind of, I think, how we're structuring our programs at HRF moving forward, is thinking about pay me in Bitcoin. Like, how can we help get there as fast as possible for nonprofits for journalists, for anybody operating around the world. How can they just live natively in Bitcoin? They can receive income, donations, profits. They can pay their colleagues and staffers. They can buy things on the internet, whether through BitRefill or other ways to do it. And then ultimately they can pay their local merchants and stuff. I mean, you'd be surprised, like BitRefill in Turkey, you can buy anything with Bitcoin. You can buy groceries, you can buy airplane, you can buy, your internet, your phone, you can buy your electricity, your heating. And as we heard recently on Citadel, you can access any of the top AI models on Bitcoin now. So it's, you know, we want to get there. We want to get to living in Bitcoin, right? And then none of these schemes win, right? That's how we win.
Yeah, because they rely on like the choke point on ramp, off ramps.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of living by the pay me in Bitcoin mantra, mentality, way of life, if you will, we do that here at Rabbit Hole Recap, particularly via Noster on Zap.stream. And we have a 21,000 sat zap from Chroma saying, let there be light. Thank you, Chroma. And then we have a question too, or not a question, really a comment when we were talking about privacy, non-custodial versus custodial wallets. Can't read, the readable name isn't up yet, but somebody said, Shinobi, Mr. Hoddle says, all normies will have custodial wallets they forget about and barely use. And yet when they do, number will always go up. And I don't know if that was a comment about privacy, but I wanted to bring up the point, like if normies are going to use custodial wallets, I would prefer it to be like a Cashew eCash wallet, because yes, it's custodial. You're taking on third-party risk, but you get the privacy benefits.
To Matt's point, what about Spark? I mean, that's a really interesting middle ground where it's essentially almost self-custodial, right? Unilateral self-exit, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's
problems. Matt Corallo. You're going to trigger Matt Corallo. Matt Corallo is going to have
some. What about Spark? I mean, my point is that, like,
The word self-custody.
I said almost. I don't want to trigger Corallo.
I dodged the term. I mean, I think we probably need more terms now because it's somewhere in the middle, right? Like, so Cashew, you're like unilaterally trusting the mint, but you have very strong privacy.
Right. And the mint can't selectively censor you.
Right. Because you have very strong privacy.
Yeah.
And then with Spark, I think they're going to make their trust model even better. It's like kind of probably closer to something like Liquid, right? Where like you almost have like a multi-sig, multi-sig type federation type of model. But better than Liquid because you have the unilateral exit. So you can just go to on-chain. But then you also have the nuance of, okay, like if you only have 1,000 sats, like can you really go on-chain? Like, no, you're like going to just pay it all on a fee. But you have the right to do that. I think that the absolute statements in general, like everyone's going to be using custodial wallets or this or that, is just inherently wrong, because where we're going and where we should be going is give people as many tools as possible. And then, you know, let them pick the tools that work best for their model. Like there's no such thing as like the best Bitcoin wallet. Like it really depends on like, what is your threat model? What is your technical competence? And what is your use case? Right. And I think that's the case with a lot of open source tools. I mean, that's the same with Noster apps. It's like, what is the best Noster app? Like the best Noster app doesn't exist. What do you need it for? And what is your technical competence?
Yeah.
And just to bring it full circle to your original comment, like I think that BitChat update is kind of fascinating to me. I haven't really got to dive deep in it, but you know, release one of BitChat was, you know, you have to use a Bluetooth mesh and you have to be near each other. And that birthed that meme of, I was actually in a park bathroom with Alex and I was peeing in the urinal next to him. And he's like, you want to send me a BitChat message? Like that meme where like they walk over next to him. But now it's using Noster relays, right? So like, if you have no internet, you can use the Bluetooth mesh. But if you do have internet, then you could communicate with people leveraging like existing internet infrastructure. And so that's a specific tool, which within itself has different, basically like use cases or tools within it, like depending on your current situation and how you want to use it.
And also just if we think about some facts, like if you look at Bitcoin in 5-year increments as it evolves, right? So let's call it whatever the early years, up through even really 2019, it was essentially on chain, right? There weren't really any other usable things. You had like some prototypes, but it was pretty much on chain only, you know, which is difficult for a lot of people that they you know, there's limitations there, obviously. And then you look at the next 5 years and then we have Lightning and Lightning powered stuff, right? And then in the last couple of years, all of a sudden we have eCash, we have Spark, we're going to have Arc. Like, I think it's reasonable to conclude that over time, as more and more developers and brilliant people come into the space who just weren't here in 2015, you're going to get more and more clever ways to use Bitcoin. And like, I think pretty obviously, it won't be everybody using a custodial wallet, especially if they can use something like a Spark, where they get awesome speed and, you know, they can use it permissionlessly and don't have to attach their ID to it. And they get some kind of guarantee that they can't really get rugged. I mean, you're going to see more adoption in that sort of thing.
I mean, the coolest part is, so like one of the biggest issues we had with any of these kind of things was then you had to like bootstrap adoption for each of them. And they all had like independent network effects. And like when the computer overheated, like that's exactly what we're talking about. Like the fact that, you know, you can build a Spark and then it can immediately pay any other Lightning enabled wallet.
Or Arc. It could pay an Arc user.
Right, because that is also using Lightning as a glue. Makes it so much easier. And then it also means that success doesn't have to be 90% of people using an Arc wallet, right? It still can be a successful, very useful tooling layer if a small subset are using it, because it's still cross-compatible with every other wallet. And I think people are really sleeping on that. And it's something that the crypto community is so off base on, because we talked about this in the past about, you know, using Coinbase's like social media thing, is they have all these different protocols and you have to do swaps and you have to do this and do that. Right. And you have USDC on the wrong chain and then you need gas from this thing or that or whatever. And then with Lightning, it just fucking works.
Yeah. And I do want to give a shout out to the wallet devs of all these different sort of second layer implementations, because I've been using Macadamia for eCash and Lightning, just playing around with it. And I just scan the QR code, whether I have Bitcoin in a custodial Lightning account on Macadamia or eCash in a more private custodial account Macadamia. If I pay a Lightning invoice, I don't even know which one it pulls from. It just pays it. And that's the UX you want. And speaking of BitChat too, to tie the knot on BitChat, normies, actually, I take this back. That was very disrespectful of me. My brother is not a normie, but I demoed BitChat to my brother. We were together this week. I was like, download BitChat. He's like, what is it? I was like,
Bitcoin for like 4 years.
I know, my brother's not a normie. I'm sorry. Sorry, Connor. Everybody knows who he is. I'm sorry. But we were together. I was like, turn off your cell data, turn off your Wi-Fi. And like, we were having a message back and forth with everything off. And it was just like a mind blowing experience. Like, oh crap, this is awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, to further just go down like that rabbit hole, like that's a perfect example where that's something where Cashew actually is really helpful, right? Because Cashew at the end of the day is a bearer instrument, they're bearer IOUs. So you're able to just transfer those offline programmatically. So that's a situation where like, if you want to do Bitcoin transfers in a mesh or on BitChat or whatever, any kind of encrypted messenger, you can use Cashew, but you can't really use Spark or Arc. And so like, I think we're going to start seeing these different, you know, protocols kind of carve out their own niches and use cases where they're most useful. And then they'll all work together with Lightning.
Yeah. And building on that, and it seems odd, we were talking about the BIS earlier, but if you look at some parts of the world that I think many of us up until recently would have considered pretty liberal and forward thinking when it came to free speech and freedom of expression, have reversed course there, particularly in the United Kingdom, in Britain. And they've had crazy laws, started with hate speech laws and gotten the age verification laws. And then you had, apparently they have a commissioner of children in the UK, and she was on the BBC earlier this week, and she was pressed by the BBC interviewer, should we have age verification for VPNs? And she was very adamant, like, yes, of course we should. And so these tools, whether you need them or not, if you're listening, maybe you don't need them. Maybe you live in an area where free speech is still protected. But I think the need for these tools is becoming more and more critical by the day. And so like BitChat can solve all three of that, all three of those.
They want to KYC people to edit Wikipedia in the UK now. That's what the government wants to do. So we're heading in that direction, right? I think the reason you need to remain, or I remain super bullish, is just we're heading in a direction where they become more permissioned, more gated off, more proprietary. You know, we can't just, devs can't just build a wallet that connects with the US dollar network, right? That's impossible. But you're seeing an explosion of people come in and build stuff that can speak Lightning or Bitcoin. So I remain pretty bullish. And you know, Lightspark, it's an interesting actor in the space because they're kind of like, they're going after bigger establishment fish. What was the big one they landed the other week?
SoFi.
Yeah. I mean, so again, that might be in a corporate way, but at the end of the day, like if you can pay Spark, you know, if Spark speaks Lightning, it's, you know, it starts to get very interesting. So, you know, Lightspark won't be the only company in that space that's kind of pushing in this direction.
No, it's critical. And Matt, I think you'll be okay with this, but on the subject of VPNs, we got a new sponsor, Obscura. Can't log.
Nice.
Carl Dong, Bitcoiner. I think you guys supported him back in the day when he's doing Geeks builds, if I recall correctly, for Bitcoin Core, reproducible builds. Went and created Obscura VPN. Has a very novel hopping system. Use the code RHR25 for 25% off an annual subscription. It's a great deal. You got to let the freaks know. It's a great deal.
Yeah, look, we have at RHR, if you listen for a while, we have trouble finding sponsors. Because the worst products will pay you the most, but you don't want to recommend bad products. So you need to find people that are actually aligned with you and ideologically aligned with you and directionally aligned with you that are offering really good, solid product. Also, in a lot of those situations, we will recommend them regardless. So then they don't really have an incentive to pay us. So it's kind of, we kind of get hit on both sides of that, on that sponsor issue. But I mean, I will say personally, I'm very excited to have Obscura on board. So what they're doing is basically Mulvad's hosting one server, they're hosting one server. So to say can't log is a little bit it's a little bit more nuanced than that. They have to work together to log you, which is just a strictly better trust model than if you're only using Mulvad, or if you're only using, you know, if you're using a single VPN provider, like it's a completely trusted relationship and you have to trust that they're not tracking your activity.
Well, shout out to Obscura. We just launched, with the help of Justin Moon and some others, a short little resource at href.org/AI with a bunch of different tools that people can use today to start making their AI use more private. And obviously some of that is VPN related. We talk about Obscura, Mulvad. Some of it is related to not needing KYC. So we talk about PaperQ, and Routester, and some other tools. We also talk about Maple. So get it, you know, you go and check that out. It's kind of interesting. We're going to be doing more and more in that space where you have this overlap of paying for AI use using Bitcoin or Lightning or Spark or Arc or whatever. So
yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah, I need to catch up with Callie because I've seen him send some notes and some tweets out about this subject, but it intuitively makes sense to me that actually like eCash, for if you're going to create payments for an agentic world where agents are paying each other, I think he makes a pretty good case that eCash is actually the best solution to that specific problem, just due to the way the sort of data transfer works for eCash tokens. So Callie, if you're listening, I would love to discuss that. Because I think that we're going to go through sort of a valley of Silicon Valley being like stable coins are the currency of the agents, or this AI token connected to this real world asset is what the agents are going to use to pay. But I think at the end of the day, all money converges to the best money, which is Bitcoin, and the different ways, the different avenues to send it. And I think agents will be spending and receiving Bitcoin at the end of the day. And I would not be surprised if it's via eCash.
Yeah, I don't understand the stablecoin thing. And I have a piece in Reason Magazine coming out soon on stablecoins. And they're certainly like globally important, and they're going to grow and they're going to become huge and way bigger than they are now. But if you think about what they are, even if they become in the trillions in terms of market cap and they start to dominate in different areas, they're totally orthogonal to Bitcoin. They're guaranteed to lose money. I think Jeff Booth calls them guaranteed to lose coins. So they're guaranteed to lose money. They can be frozen. They can be censored. They can be confiscated. You know, they don't really compete with Bitcoin in that regard. So I think eventually you're going to see this bear out, especially when it comes to AI tools. Like, why would, I mean, I just don't really get it. Unless it was forced to, why would these open AI networks want to get paid in something that they have no control over? So we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Completely agree. Freaks, it's Friday afternoon. We're keeping it tight because of the events that Matt and Alex are attending out west. They got to go to dinner with Jerome Powell tonight to really update him on all these new second layer solutions and the interoperability of the Lightning Network and how Bitcoin's going to replace Swift, not XRP. You guys got to go elbow out Brad Garlinghouse and make sure he doesn't get actually, you know what? Let Brad Garlinghouse lead Jerome Powell and crew the wrong way. You guys should actually entice them to go get drinks tonight.
No, I will just, I mean, jokes aside, I think, you know, as an American, it really pains me to watch the country take the bad trajectory. Like, it's better for all of us if we can kind of steer them away from it. And it is inevitable, but if you can lessen the pain and the bad decisions and how they affect like the average pensioner or the average, you know, American, it's a worthy goal. I don't know how successful you'll be, but I mean, that was part of the reason why I came down for this week's events, right? Like I was very aware that the SALT event was going to be mostly suits focused on crypto, right? But I convinced a couple of them that maybe, you know, we're doing it the wrong way. I think you can have massive, massive wins. And I don't pretend like I'm going to ever convince Charles Hoskinson or Brad Garlinghouse because they just going to follow their pockets. It is what it is. But if you convince some other random person.
Well, also, just closing thought, we're just sitting here and thinking about the injustice of how a small group of people can arbitrarily decide, again, the cost of capital, the rules of the money system for the whole world. Why should they have a decision-making power over the lives of billions of people in places like, you know, whether it be Nigeria or Pakistan or China or Indonesia or wherever? I mean, it's just so crazy that this unelected tiny group of people get to decide what's best for everybody, and nobody has a alternative until now. So I just continue to be so inspired by Bitcoin. Matt and I visited a place called Inspiration Point this morning. So we're inspired by a new system where the small cartel of people don't get to make the rules.
By the way, Marty, do you know why they do the event in Jackson? Alex asked the AI.
The Fed event.
I do not.
It's because they just wanted to go fly fishing, so they decided
to. So Paul Volcker, who many freaks will know, famous Fed chair who spiked the rates to kill inflation in the early 80s, he was a totally addicted fly fisherman. And the KC Fed board, which was responsible for putting together the meeting, decided to lure him here by putting the event here in the Jackson Hole area. And that would ensure that he would come because so he could fly fish. So there's your trivia for the day.
And then it had Lindy. Well, and now it's 40 years later and it's just still here every year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, 3 points. Incredible pun. I caught that. It was incredible. Two, Paul Volcker, if he's the one who decided, you know what, I'm okay with it. Okay, he did the hard thing when it was unpopular back in the 70s. Jacked him up to 18%. Yeah. Paul, if you want to go fishing, you can. And then number three, Alex, to your point, that cabal is only going to get smaller. I think today, really to tie up this whole conversation and bring it back to what we started with, I think Trump and Bessent successfully bullied Powell to sort of ease rates at a time when many people didn't think he wanted to. And I think that's the big theme about this whole squabble between Trump and Powell over the last year, even before the election, is that I think it's pretty clear that the Trump administration and Scott Bessent would like to bring more control over the monetary system within the Treasury. And I think we're headed down this path. They need consolidated, uniform policy across the Fed and the Treasury, which aren't really separate, but there has been this facade that they're separate. And I think what we're witnessing right now is the dissolution of that facade even. And it's just going to be clear that the money is going to become more centralized here in the United States and the policy around it.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, thank you for doing the hard things, getting your elbows dirty with a bunch of altcoiners and central bankers. I know it's not easy work, but it's
literally
it's very important work.
Trying to do our best here.
I'm just glad I didn't fall down a hill while trying to set up RHR, but yeah. Another week. We made it happen. Huge shout out to Alex for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
I love your freaks. Stay on the straight sets.
Peace and love.
Okay.